Hi, I'm Chase Bunker, but you're not here for me. You're here for my guest. He is a popular actor and comedian. You've seen him in Happy Gilmore 2, Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo, and of course the Grown Up series. You can see him at the Florida Theater on May 28th as part of his Rescue Husband tour. Tickets are on sale now. He is Rob Schneider. Rob, how are you?
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I'm good. I'm just looking for a parking space. Just dropped my kid off at school. The usual dad stuff, you know?
Yeah, I'll be experiencing that come July, where I have to go through the joys of parenthood and also finding parking spaces. I think you're a part of one of the greatest casts in Saturday Night Live history, between you, Adam Sandler, Chris Rock, David Spade, Chris Farley, Dana Carvey, Phil Hartman. With all of that talent, how hard was it to get your skits on the show?
It was hard, you know, because, you know, whoever had a movie, if Mike Myers had a movie, was doing Wayne's World 1 or 2, you know, then they're going to obviously rightfully push that, you know. So, and then you had guys who would never screw up, like Phil Hartman. They would never make a mistake on air, never flub a word. So, you know, you're going up against the greatest. And then, you know, Farley was like, you know, he was a tornado, physical tornado. He was a huge man, but very graceful at the same time. So he's an athlete, a sloppy athlete. And, you know, so, you know, and Adam Sandler obviously was just became this superstar talent. And David Spade, the funniest guy you'll ever hang with. So it was an incredible. And then Dana Carvey was still there. Dennis Miller was there when I was there. And Norm Macdonald came on. It was really a murderer's row. It was really like the Yankees in 1927. It was an incredible, you know, incredible time. I think it shows, you know, who has gone and who's maintained and who's still interested in doing stuff, frankly. I mean, you have to still want to do it. That's the beautiful thing about doing stand-up, is that's something you can continually get better at. It's not something like, you know, professional athletes. I work out at this gym here, and I live in Scottsdale, Arizona now. And a lot of these athletes are rehabbing because all these baseball players want to, and all the teams want you to throw 100 miles an hour. And the fact of the matter is, you're going to blow your arm out.
Mm-hmm.
So all these guys are rehabbing, and their careers, you know, just a few short years ago, their careers were, you know, literally 4 years was the average career. And that's including the guys who played for 20, you know, 15 years. Now it's two. It's in and out. And they want you to throw 100 miles an hour and blow your arm up. Whereas like a stand-up comedian, it takes 10 years really to get really good. If you want to get great, it's 20. And so, you know, to maintain it and keep interested in it, you got to keep doing it. It's like, you know, being a musician. It's just, you know, so, but I'm very lucky that I've been able to, you know, I think not peak in my 20s or 30s. I think I'm at my best right now, to be honest.
Were you always a stand-up, or was this something that you kind of evolved and you developed over time, like post-SNL?
That's a good question. I mean, I started out as a stand-up. I mean, that was it. I know I never was one of those guys who were like, well, I'll, you know, after this, I'll learn how to do stand-up. No, I got on Saturday Night Live because I was a stand-up. That was the, you know, there was a, you know, they hired a lot of improv guys from Second City. And that was, and then they also, the other group of guys that they got was, you know, from stand-up. And so there was a wave of stand-up. So Adam Sandler was a stand-up, Chris Rock was a stand-up, David Spade was a stand-up, I was a stand-up, you know, Dennis Miller was a stand-up, Dana Carvey was a stand-up. So that's how we, were able to get a, that's how we were able to get, you know, on, because we were funny. And if you were funny at that time, you were going to make it somehow. There was no doubt about it. If, you know, we all knew, well, we're going to make it. So, but getting on Saturday Night Live, I mean, that was just a dream, because then, you know, the show business world opens up to you. You get to maybe make movies and stuff. So that was absolutely insane. So you're in your mid-20s and you're on the, you know, a show that can make you a superstar. That was just the greatest thing ever. still to me, some of the most exciting times of my life was, you know, getting to say live from New York at Saturday night. So, and it's still, you know, I think there are good people there again. It's exciting. So it's like the best description of that place is it's a really good restaurant, Saturday Night Live, in an amazing location. That's the best description of that show.
With all the people that I mentioned, and also the people that you frequently do movies with, how hard is it to keep a straight face? Because I imagine you have to be breaking like at least like every other take.
No, never. You've never seen me break once in any sketch I ever did. That was a sign of to me, weakness. And I love those guys who do break, but like I was never going to be one of those. You're never going to break me in a scene. You know, I mean, sometimes you're doing a movie, you get the giggles, and then that's a disaster for the movie. Because what happens is you lose the scene, then other people get the giggles. It's very contagious. It's the COVID of comedy. What you want to do, and then the camera guy starts shaking the camera. You got to keep it together. This is a job, you know. You got to enjoy it, but hold it together. Adam Sandler's one of those guys who would break. And it's like, what? And he just couldn't help it. And he was just so, because he was also having fun. And the audience would laugh at him laughing. And so he was unusually still entertaining, but he wasn't faking it. You know, he definitely couldn't keep it together. And that was fun for us to watch because he really was trying everything he could do to keep it together. But no, I don't. I think it's absolutely a sin for a comedian or an actor to laugh at his own stuff, because unless it's genuine. Because it's cheating. It's like you're not supposed to have more fun than the audience, and that's just a fact. So you know that's how I feel about that.
Were you on SNL during the infamous Steven Seagal episode?
Yeah, I mean I don't know why everybody makes such a big deal of that. But he's just one of those guys who's just easy to shit on. I did a sketch with him. I mean he was fine. I just think that like people always ask who's the worst guy, who's the best guy, you know. So I thought he got. I mean, clearly, you know, he's got his own thing. He's whatever he's dealing with. And I didn't have one problem with him. I think that's so overblown. People who just like, he's just an easy target. And so, you know, he wasn't that much worse than other people. He wasn't that much better than other people. So I think that that's a completely easy target. It's like shooting fish in a barrel, making fun of a guy like that.
From a writing perspective, is there a particular skit or even a particular movie that you're most proud of?
I don't know, man. I mean, the Copy Machine guy was pretty amazing because it ended up being in Time Magazine as one of the most, because everybody did that. Everybody thought that was funny. There's very few times when you like come up with something and go like, well, and everybody thinks it's funny. Mm-hmm. Not some people. Everybody thought that was fun. And so that's pretty cool. Deuce Bigelow was fun, you know. Adam Sandler laughed his, you know, really hard at that. And then he said he would produce it. And I said, oh, my goodness. So, you know, Adam's been kind enough to include me in all his incredible success. And that was fun. I mean, I like the fact that, like, you know, right now I'm doing stand-up and I'm going to be at the Florida Theater in a couple of weeks. I like that, being an artist in my own time and talking about what the audience is thinking. And that's something I learned from like some of these great comedians that we have now, Chris Rock, Dave Chappelle, especially, and, you know, Louis C.K. These are great artists at the peak of their game, especially the last decade. And you see them and it's like the audience is like, it's been so much cultural crap that's happening this, you know, with this kind of, you know, there's an attack on Western civilization. There's a cultural attack. There's this woke, which is just communism dressed up as manners, you know. And the audience is like, well, make sense of the world to me. So that's the best time to do comedy is when you have a, you know, stuff going on in the culture and in the country. And, you know, when people are attacked for having common sense or admitting common sense, and, you know, you still see it. In California, they're still having boys, you know, beating girls in their own sport. It's stupid. It's these narcissistic failed male athletes like that Leah Thompson dude. It's like he would have been 390th, you know. He wouldn't have been. He's just a mediocre athlete, and he gets to play against women and come in first place and get stand on the podium. It's stupid. It's absolutely, to use the word retarded, it applies. The culture has become retarded. And but at the same time, it's an opportunity to, you know, to mock it, and to, it's worthy of derision. And if the audience laughs at it, it's because they recognize that it's deserving of ridicule.
Yeah, speaking of political ideals, like one of the things that I kind of like seeing, like in this time of political division, I've seen more and more people separate themselves from others who think differently. But like, your friends haven't done that. Like, like you'll still do movies with like all the people, and they haven't distanced themselves from you. And they, it's almost like this respect of like, hey, he may have different thoughts than me, but I still know this man as a friend. I've known this man for a while. And that's one thing I really admire about you and your friend group.
Well, thank you. Well, that's more of a compliment for Adam Sandler.
Well, but, it's a compliment for you as well.
I mean, I mean, what else do you have, really, if you don't have some sort of loyalty, you know, for your friends? And also, it's like, you know, there is the cancel culture. I mean, I refuse to believe that. What you have is you have a group of cowards who run show business, and they're at the major streaming services, and they're at Disney, and they're at the studios, and they're just in their bubble. And they're not interested in making great art. They're interested in being part of a club, to be included, to have those parties, and to be able to go and do what they want and continue. They don't operate the same way like I would. I want to have, like, when I come to Florida, I go to the Florida Theater. When I'm going to be next week, this weekend, I'm going to be in Sarasota. I have 6 sold out shows there.
Nice.
To me, it's like, I want to make it the funnest experience for that audience, the best comedy show in the country. And, you know, and I believe that I have that right now. So, I mean, that's the goal. That's my thing. The studio executives don't operate that way. They operate from fear. They're like, well, you know, they know they're going to get their job is a temporary job. They know it's eventually they're going to run out, because every executive eventually loses their job. So they operate not what is the best, you know, something I can put my name on that's going to be great. It's like, what will delay my inevitable firing the longest? And so when you operate that way, you're not operating from a place of creativity, or someplace you're looking for something brilliant and that's something that can stand the test of time. So that is, you know, not the way I want to operate, you know. So in this cancel culture, the blacklisting of the 1950s makes you realize, you know what? I think the conservatives were mostly Republicans at that time. I think they were blacklisting. They were right. They were a communist takeover in Hollywood. Absolutely. And now the leftists have taken over Hollywood, and they're blacklisting comedians. The blacklist went from 1953 to 1959. Kirk Douglas famously ended it by saying, who really wrote the best picture of that year? Spartacus, Stanley Kubrick's film, was written by Dalton Trumbo. So with by that time, the bag was, you know, people were writing, you know, not using their real names. I realized that was the end of the blacklisting. The blacklisting for conservative people is still going on. You still have Jimmy Kimmel talking about murdering, you know, blaming a Trump person wrongly, lying, or just being, an ignorant person, which I believe he's both, about who killed Charlie Kirk, and he blamed it on a Trump supporter. He was rightly fired, and then because of the leftist lunatics, he gets hired back because of Disney's fear. And then, like, and he does it again. You know, I mean, just, there wasn't even a joke the last time, saying he, you know, Melania Trump is like, you know, has the glow of a new widow. It's like, say that about Obama. You never said that about Obama. You know, you never said that about his wife. You never said that about Jill Biden. It's like, so you have an ugliness in this thing, and it's a political partisan in the guise of comedy. In other words, it's political rhetoric disguised as comedy. And I don't like that either. I'm there to entertain. But it's important to call this stuff out, because I think it is violent rhetoric, or stuff that could lead to violence, is, you know, is an ugliness, and it is a cancer on our society. So, you know, at the same time, you know, free speech is free speech, and we have to protect the ugly stuff too. But it's not free of being of derision, and it's not free of consequences. So yeah, if you don't like something, you could say something about it. But the idea of silencing people, the idea of as free speech, if it's for anything, it's the right to say something that could really make somebody else angry, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's the bad stuff that needs protection.
So when you do your stand up for those who go, like, you don't necessarily do a lot of the political stuff. Is that what you're kind of saying? Like, are you just there to just like, hey, I do, but
I'm not there to make political points. Mm. I mean, who needs that? They can stay home. I don't want to reinforce people's own political echo chamber, but I will talk about stuff that's happening and make fun of it in a way that I'm there to. You know, what comedians, I mean, what any good artist should be is a guy who just, you know, everyone is just, you know, they're taking their kids to school. They're going to work. And then what, they watch a little of the news. Maybe they don't watch any of it. Or they'll get a little something. They'll watch a little Fox News. Maybe they want to see the other side. They'll watch the, you know, Clinton News Network, whatever. And what happens is, but they're not going to sit down and write and really think about something. That's my job. My job is to spend a little more time on something so that I could make them something that they're aware of and maybe that they have an opinion on, but it's not a fully formed opinion. It's my job to show them the absurdity of something that they probably agree with anyway. Or if they don't agree with it, even if they're on the opposite end, I'll kind of try to show the absurdity of somebody and question their own, you know, foundational thinking, or, you know, that's it. It's like what Mark Twain, describing comedy, it's like, you know, what Mark Twain said about, you know, explaining a joke is like dissecting a frog. All the parts are still there, but it just doesn't jump. So in other words, I'm boring you talking about this stuff. I'm boring me talking about it. But the idea is like, I do my homework. I do the stuff. I do the thinking about. I'll talk about the, you know, the boys and girls sports in a way that's hopefully interesting. I'll talk about what's happening, you know, with President Trump and some of his decisions. I'll talk about what I think what's happening in the culture warfare. And I've, you know, but it's for jokes. And the idea is there's some stuff that you can tell how I feel, which direction I go and how far the culture has been undermined. And so you see that. But, you know, if they're not laughing the whole time, I'm not doing my job.
You can see him at the Florida Theater on May 28th as part of this Rescue Husband Tour. Tickets are on sale now. Rob, before I let you go, I want to ask you the same 10 questions I like to ask all my guests here. Are you ready?
Yeah. Yes, that's first question. Nine more.
Nine more. Here we go. These are inspired by the late, great James Lipton. What is your most played song on your playlist?
Gosh, that's a good one. Gosh, it's got to be Jobim. Jobim, Antonio Carlos Jobim. And any song from him, his playlist. Antonio Carlos Jobim. He's the beautiful Brazilian guy who wrote that gorgeous song. The Girl from Ipanema.
Who's your guilty pleasure band?
Gosh. Poison.
Favorite song you like to belt it out to, no matter how good or how bad you sound?
When I was young, I never needed anyone. Making love was just for fun. Those days are gone. That one.
I was really hoping you're going to go into the chorus on that one.
That one.
Okay. If you could eat one meal for a week, what is it?
If I could eat one?
If you could eat one meal for a week, what is it?
If I could eat one meal?
Mm-hmm.
A feijoada.
What is that?
This beautiful Brazilian stew. It's unbelievable. So what all the poor people, all the stuff that the rich people didn't want to eat, like pig ears and stuff like that and chicken feet. And they, that's all the poor people got what was left over, and they just cooked it with beans, and then they put different spices in it and made it a little spicy for some people, and olive oil. And then they cooked it with the beans, and then all the rich people said, that smells good. What is that? And anyway, that became the national dish in Brazil. And it's a beautiful feijoada.
Interesting.
Beautiful.
What's your drink of choice?
Okay, Ribeiro del Duero. It's a red wine region of northern Portugal and Spain. Ribeiro del Duero, D-U-E-R-O. And it's a beautiful red wine. It's just as good as Bordeaux. It's basically the same mountain range, except you're not spending $3,000. I would never spend $3,000 on a bottle of wine. That's stupid. But I'll do a couple of hundred because I've got no business, my money.
What is your favorite superhero?
That's a good one. Stretch Armstrong.
That's a good answer. I mean, that everybody usually sticks with Marvel or DC. You don't hear Stretch Armstrong often. That's a great reference.
Oh, man. Stretch Armstrong is one you could actually use, and it does work. Mm-hmm. He does stretch. I will say, though, there's a Stretch Armstrong. After 20 years, he breaks. Mm-hmm. He's not as flexible. So if you get an original Stretch Armstrong, which you should do, you should. He's going to break. He loses the plastic, loses his flexibility. It's not Stretch Forever Armstrong. So you have to just enjoy him while you can. Just like me, enjoy me while you can.
That took a turn. Favorite internet video?
The woman taking off on a is it paragliding or what is it? It's a it's where she, you know, it's a little on a boat and they drag you on the it is to Miley Cyrus's Wrecking Ball, and it's this heavy set woman who should not be trying to paraglide, and she's and she's in Mexico, obviously, where they just take your money and they don't care necessarily if you get hurt. Anyway, she gets this big woman. She thinks she's going to take off and have a nice little view over the bay in Cancun or wherever this takes place. And she just gets dragged onto the beach, sand and every orifice. Then she's upside down, pantsless, and then falls ingloriously to her own, to everyone's derision for eternity. On into the water, and it's one of those spectacular things that you can laugh at 100 times over. That one is good. Also, I just saw one today, which is a guy, a criminal, clearly jumping over a fence with a mask on, and then there's a gigantic dog there who bites his ass and then just destroys him. It's beautiful. He comes pantsless, and then the dog takes him down, and you don't know what happens, and you don't want to know what happens, but you know what happens. It's just one of those things where karma. The incorrect actual description of karma. Karma isn't necessarily, you get punished. It's karma is a bigger idea. You can look it up on yourselves. Anyway, that's the answer for that.
What are you streaming right now?
You know what? I don't have access to it. The My TV that I get is too close to the kids' room. They live on the other wall. And when I have time at night, so I'm not watching anything. I hate that. But if I could, it would probably be the Beef show. I can't wait to see the second season of that.
I like how you're selling parenthood to me. Like, I can't, like, the bad side about parenting, can't watch anything.
Well, you're going to be so tired. You're going to be up. That's why you got to grab sleep when you can. That 20-minute nap, that hour nap, it's going to be the best thing that ever happened to you.
It's good to know. I'll write that down. You know what I'm saying? And finally.
Yeah.
Rob Schneider, give me your spiciest hot take. It could be about anything in life.
If I was president of these great United States, and I'm not ruling it out, I would first day, I would say, hey, listen. Get out of the fast lane if you're not going fast. That's what the fast lane's for. All right? Mm-hmm. And then I would resign right after.
All that work, all those months of campaigning, you get there, like, all right, I got this done. All right, cool, peace, I'm out.
Get out of the fast lane. That's what the fast lane's for. Every other country does that. Just because you pay your taxes doesn't mean you get to stay in the fast lane, block everybody else who's actually in a hurry. That's the point of a fast lane. It's supposed to be fast. Get out. Move over. Also, when somebody lets you in, give them a wave. acknowledge that they let you in. But if they let you in and don't wave, well, that's your fault for letting them in. If you're not going to be generous all the way, if you're going to expect something, don't let them in. That's it.
So you're telling
then
me.
Then I resign.
So you don't want me to go 60 on the highway in the fast lane. You don't want me 10 under. You always want me at speed or even faster. What is considered fast? Like you can stay in the fast lane? Or is it one of those, you're in it, you're past everybody, now get over?
If you can get, if somebody's behind you, obviously wanting to get somewhere and risk their life, whatever. I mean, you let them go. Get out of the fast lane. The idea just, you know, but this is American thing. You know, it's the same thing. Like Americans don't get the, you know, when you go to the grocery store, you can grab the fruit and go, I don't want that, when you put it back and somebody else has to buy that fruit or they throw it away. It's mm-hmm. like, it's just this, that's an entitled fruit buyer. You know, they don't do that in Europe. In Europe, you don't get to squeeze the fruit and see if you like it. You just go like, I want three of those. And the guy go, okay, yeah, all right. And they put it in the bag for you. You know, so it's the same thing. You know, Americans feel like, hey, you know, I pay my taxes. I can go as slow as I want the fast lane.
I just imagine.
Do that in Germany. I'll drive you off the road.
I'm just imagining people now at like a Walmart or just like some like grocery store. They're just squeezing oranges and like, I don't like that. And you put it away and just someone's shouting, hey, you got to take that orange. No, I pay my taxes.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way I feel about it. Exactly. 1,000%.
You can see
but
him,
anyway,
you can see him at the Florida Theater on May 28th. Tickets on sale now. Rob, I'll let you go so you can finally put your car in park. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Thank you, brother. You take care. Good. Thank you for having me. Take care.